Welcome to the midday for a Thursday. I'm Norman. Stephanie is right there, and Figaro is here too.
Figaro is here.
That's right. Every day.
Jason Hardy is our guest today. He's a bass who's in Wisconsin to appear in that role in Madison Opera's production of The Marriage of Figaro. It's this weekend at the Overture Center Friday night, and there's a Sunday matinee. Jason Hardy has been garnering rave reviews for his Mozart, and particularly for this role. Here's a review from Omaha a little bit earlier this year. Jason Hardy sang with a voice like black velvet, equally dark and soft, yet his dark instrument was also remarkably flexible. And he holds awards from the Met, Opera National Council auditions, the Lyric, and the list goes on and on. Pages and pages of accomplishments for our guest.
And now he's here, which is another accomplishment.
And it's not his first time in Wisconsin. Jason, you were you appeared with Florentine Opera in Milwaukee in Semele a couple of seasons ago. But this is your first time in Madison, right?
First time, yes.
Well, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming.
So, and is it fate would have it, like Figaro, you're getting married before the year is out also.
That's right. My own real life marriage of Figaro, indeed.
Does that make the opera even more exciting somehow?
Well, I don't know how much you're aware of the backstory, but actually my fiance and I met during a production of Marriage of Figaro, ironically speaking. So it's a special opera for me in many ways.
Oh, that's really... Hopefully there's no count figure looming in your private lives.
thank heavens, no.
Good. Well, how has the production shaping up?
I think we're all very excited about what we're going to present here in Madison this weekend. This opera is a relatively complicated comedy, and to put it on its feet successfully is no small task. And it's a large cast of characters, and with the interweaving of all these sort of storylines that go along in The Marriage of Figaro, it can be a tough story to tell, but we all feel very excited about what we've put together for the audience here in Madison. Great singers, great singing actors, and a very clear vision from our director, A. Scott Perry, who's really came together with very clear ideas and allowed us to explore our own various takes on the characters, but also brings a lot to the table too. So we're very excited about what we're going to do this weekend.
Is this one of those operas that requires you or any of the other singers to be in strange, awkward physical positions while singing just for the sake of the plot?
I've certainly had this conversation a number of times, having done a number of these type of productions that try to make perhaps their own stamp on a classic. Fortunately, that is not the case here in this production. We're going very traditional in the production, and I think the values, the production values, both vocally, physically, and all that, will hold true to the standard with which I think we all appreciate.
Is there any special requirement? I mean, this is a big question, I suppose, but in opera, for an actor, I mean, the acting part of the opera, to play to a huge house, you know, a couple thousand people, and make subtleties apparent?
Well, that's a great challenge for all of us as opera singers. We, as opposed to being acting singers, we are singing actors, and the singing does come first. And we've talked a lot about this, even in the process here, about using what is in the play in the text, and being very text driven in terms of how we present our characters, and knowing the historical context of our characters, for instance, in The Marriage of Figaro, with the conflict of class, the lower class and the upper classes, and understanding that relationship, but also this being very much a time of revolt for the lower classes and their the upsurge of the lower class, and this sort of understanding as well. There is a lot of detail in there that you may not see necessarily in the text, but has to be understood in a physical way with how just a look here and there and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So from a character standpoint, there is that. Musically, there is no greater than Mozart in setting such texts. Lorenzo da Ponte gave him a wonderful libretto to work with. And Mozart does so much that we don't have to. As actors, when you have a script, you know, your subtext has to be built into just the dialogues that you bring to it. Whereas Mozart paints the picture for you. You, as an interpreter of his music, really have to honor sort of the things that he gives you. Because he's done the job for you. It's just you to do justice to what he's given you.
He's really written a lot of, he's put the characters into the music.
Absolutely.
You feel the emotions. There's a little bit of obsequiousness here and there. And mm-hmm. It's not, a little bit early for the concept of leitmotifs, I guess, but he's done that.
Absolutely. Every time Susanna walks in on the scene, her theme sort of plays. Very much sort mm-hmm. of leading that direction.
We've talked about Handel and Mozart a little bit so far, but you've also explored some very interesting solo repertory, and you've brought a couple of CDs that we're going to be talking about. So this one that we're looking at is called Youth and Love, and it features music by Schumann and Finzi, among others. How did you select your performances for this CD?
It's a good question, actually. For a bass singing, particularly in the song recital repertoire, believe it or not, there's not a lot of repertoire out there that doesn't involve death and darkness. When you think of the bass voice, you're limited in the repertoire. And really what I wanted to capture in Youth and Love is that you don't typically think of a bass voice as youthful. You think of it as more mature. And one thing I really wanted to look for was love songs and songs that...
And not lecherous love songs, right?
Right, exactly. To just sort of tell a story. And what Youth and Love I tried to capture was from just all the aspects of love involved, from an age-old wisdom approach to love, to the torment of young love and tragedy when love is lost. And I sort of define each section on this as the journey of love. And you get everything from the naive and young to old. And and songs that I felt very excited to work on that perhaps in some cases had not been done so often by a bass. You visualize a soprano maybe singing instead. But I think it allowed me to paint a lot of different colors in my own voice and put it on a CD and just have something for posterity.
Well, you make it very convenient for the novice listener because of these categories that you have each group of songs under. Well, if you feel like a little tragedy today, you'll listen to Track 8.
Oh, yeah.
You want ecstasy? Well, that follows and it includes this song. In fact, it's ecstasy. It looks like composer Rinaldo Hahn has the lock on ecstasy on
yes,
the CD.
Yes, a whole group of...
represented four times.
There's also jealousy and torment.
Oh, yeah.
But before we get to those, let's have some ecstasy from Rinaldo Hahn. And this is, the Exquisite Hour?
Yes, L'Heure Exquise of Rinaldo Hahn.
With our guest today, Jason Hardy. And the pianist is Jerome Tan,
a good friend of mine.
Concert performance in Huntsville, Alabama.
L'Heure Exquise by Rinaldo Hahn, performed by our guest Jason Hardy and pianist Jerome Tan. Jason, you said there were about 1,000 people in the audience for that recital.
Yes, it was a very surprising turnout, to say the least. We don't get that often in song recitals these days.
Yeah, even in New York City, for heaven's sake.
Even in New York, indeed.
Yeah.
So is a bass. Is it kind of a foregone conclusion that you're going to get a lot of villains and, Mephistophelian characters.
Villains and old guys.
And old guys.
Which
always
actually,
trying to get the soprano exactly away from the tenor.
Right.
The father of the girl kind
indeed,
of thing. Yeah.
Which is what makes this such a pleasure to do, actually, the character that's getting married. So another reason why I'm so excited any time to do a Figaro, to sort of break it up a little bit and be the love interest.
There are a number of ensemble pieces in this opera, so you get a chance to do some solo singing and lots of ensemble ensemble work. Is that something that you look forward to when you meet a whole new cast like this?
Yeah, it is. Even in this business, of course, you may not have worked with anyone in the cast, but you sort of... It's insta-friend because we all have people in common in this business, and some of us have worked together. And it's a nice sort of thing. There's always a different energy and a different dynamic with every cast that you get into. And luckily, if you're at a good company like here in Madison, they do such a great job at bringing in good colleagues and good musicians, and really you start in such a great place that... You see the sort of line as to where the potential is, as to where you can go with it. It's a lot of fun, and the ensembles of Mozart, they just don't get better than that.
So who's this bass character in Eugene Onegin, the Tchaikovsky opera?
Well, speaking of which, he's a prince, and typically stage an older gentleman, but again, one of the rare love songs in the operatic repertoire for a bass. He speaks... You know, to love, all men are susceptible to it. And it's a beautiful aria and set in the opera in just such a beautiful way. And the orchestration in that, of course, this is with piano in the recital. But it's a very special song to me. It was one of the first arias I fell in love with because it was indeed a love song.
By Tchaikovsky. Wow, it's kind of like the musical equivalent of the limbo, isn't it? How low can you go and keep moving?
That was Jason Hardy with All Men Surrender to Love from the opera Eugene Onegin by Tchaikovsky. Mm-hmm. We were talking during the music that you've done a lot of self-study in Russian and other languages, as I guess many opera singers do.
Indeed, it certainly helps bring those layers we were talking about earlier to the character when you understand the text that you're singing, so very important.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Tallahassee, Florida, North Florida Panhandle.
Farming?
Yes, actually, my grandparents were farmers, so I spent my summers working the farm.
He's slipping into that southern accent.
As soon as I do it.
It's not all that rare, I think, for opera singers that come from an agricultural background. Cheryl Milnes grew up on a dairy farm. We interviewed somebody else from recently from Wisconsin.
That was Tom Wolpat, I think.
Yes, I think Tom Wolpat, too, but I was thinking of somebody more operatic in nature who also had that agrarian background. And I think it's fairly common among European singers, at least in past years.
Mm-hmm. How did you get from there to here in 30 seconds or less?
Yeah, right.
Wait, really, how did you figure out that you wanted to be an opera singer?
In school, I'd played in band and eventually joined in the chorus and just sort of found that singing was something I really loved and never thought I'd pursue it as a career. But one thing just sort of led to another, and I thought I could really give this a shot, and here we are today. Just one thing sort of led to another. I feel very blessed to do what I do, for sure.
Did some teacher at some point say that classic line, you know, you could do this for a living?
I think the teacher I trust the most said, if you can do anything else, by all means do it, having experienced it. I wouldn't wish this lifestyle on anybody, but at the same time, if you've got that passion to sing and to share yourself with people and it's a calling of sorts.
It's a lot like
public
radio.
You can't do it just for yourself because it really is it's an ungrateful business in a lot of ways, but what you get to do is very special, and it allows me to express myself in so many other ways that I can't even do or to articulate in words.
Well, this CD that you've brought in certainly has a broad range. I mean, I realize it's categorized as youth and love. Actually, that's pretty broad right there. But we've mentioned, of course, Schumann being on here. We've heard some Rinaldo Hahn. There's also Gerald Finzi. and then, of course, the Tchaikovsky that we just heard. But it's been a long time, I think, since anybody has brought back Flanders and the Swan. And you do it several times over. This is one of their most famous songs, and this will certainly lift you out of any blues that may have beset you from either the Tchaikovsky or anything else. It's called The Hippopotamus.
A bold hippopotamus was standing one day on the banks of the cool Shalimar. He gazed at the bottom as it peacefully lay by the light of the evening star. Away on a hilltop set.
Thousand member sing along.
Nothing like a little mud to bring out the enthusiasm in a crowd. Huntsville, Alabama. Flanders and Swan. Let's see. Donald Swan and
Michael Flanders.
Michael Flanders, yeah. A classic comedy couple.
That was a performance by our guest, Jason Hardy, and Jerome Tan was the pianist. Jason will be appearing tomorrow night and then again on Sunday afternoon as Figaro in Mozart's The Marriage of Figaro in a production by Madison Opera. If you'd like more information about Jason, he's got a website, jasonhardy.net. And for the opera and tickets and everything you need to know about this production of Figaro, the number is 608-258-4141 or madisonopera.org. Oh, there's a pre-concert talk an hour before each of the shows as well.